Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Use a lock that has no key, bind you with chain.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Kick it in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my
land. All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, everybody, and this is Annie for Showreel, a look at the Australian film industry and, of course, the thing that's going on almost right now, or coming up, is a MIFF, of course, the Melbourne International Film Festival. It starts on the 6th of August and runs to the 23rd of August. It's in cinema. It's not just in cinema, it's online as well because it's got regional partners. It's 18 days of premiere showcase, international features, exclusive screenings, galas and special events, panel discussions, industry events and XR experiences for cinemaphiles of all tastes and persuasions. It's got a variety of different metro venues. So if you think that it's too distant because you don't want to come into the city, it's ACME, the Astor Theatre, the Capitol, Forum Melbourne, Hoyts Melbourne Central, IMAX Melbourne, Kino Cinema, Cinema Nova and Village Crown, Cinema Crown. So there's a variety of inner city places that you can buy tickets for. You have to get your, you can get online program, but you also can, they made a mistake a couple of years ago of not doing a printed version, but they've backtracked and realised that everybody wants a printed version of their program. So you can get that all over the place. I've seen them in a variety of different outlets. There's regional screenings, 14th to the 16th and the 21st of, to the 23rd of August across two exciting weekends, they say. MIFF is arriving in regional cinemas throughout Victoria, bringing a curated program of some of the world's best films. So that's going to be in venues, Showbiz Cinema, that's in Ballarat, Star Cinema Eagle Hawk in Bendigo, Theatre Royal in Castlemaine, the Memo, that's Hillsville. There's the Peninsula Cinema in Rosebud, Sale Cinema in Sale, Capital Cinema in Warrnambool, the Pivotonian in Geelong, and also the Village Cinema in Geelong. So have a look around and you'll see that there's a whole variety of very interesting films as well as other things going on, not just in Melbourne, but also in regional cities. I have had the fortune of having a chat with the filmmaker and the lead actor for The Latcher, which is going to get its premiere at the MIFF. It's an Australian film. It's a, what do you call it? It's a psycho horror. This is the chat I had with James Hunter and Lucy Lovegrove.
So The Latcher. So James, tell us about how you began this rather creepy production.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very organic process. So, it was initially the concept sort of was rooted in fairy tale, ideas and myths. I was very creeped out by a story, which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with, of Rumpelstiltskin and the sort of Faustian bargain in that story, and the idea of sort of it taking a child, taking a baby. I found that very, very creepy and very eerie. And the idea, it sort of started there. I mean, that was the foundation of it, the very sort of basis of it. But that was a very fertile ground to kind of grow from. And so I ended up co-writing the film with Brody Marchant, who is a good friend of mine. And Lucy and I, the lead actress, actually have a friendship which spans back like over a decade at this point. And so Lucy came on quite early in the process as well, before the story and the character had really been fleshed out. And she actually was instrumental in helping us build her character, who is a midwife who is suffered a personal tragedy and is haunted by this eerie presence which sort of creeps from the bushland into the home where she lost everything.
And of course, Australia has got a good history of making very good supernatural films about the supernatural. So are you leaning on that in a sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got a really rich history here. I mean, just to name a few Australian films which I think I drew a lot of inspiration from, Picnic at Hanging Rock, is one of the sort of eeriest films I've ever seen. I mean, there's just something so uncanny and ambiguous and mysterious which just really stays with me, the atmosphere in that film. The Babadook is another film which I absolutely adore. It's probably my favorite horror film that's come out of Australia. So yeah, look, there was a long sort of history of great Australian films which we drew from. We also drew from American cinema, like Rosemary's Baby was a real touchstone for us with this particular subject and story. And that was a film that I watched with Lucy, and Don't Look Now as well was another from the 70s with Donald Sutherland, which was another great inspiration to us in terms of sort of this grief-infused horror.
So, Lucy, being the lead actor, it's actually quite difficult to hold the screen effectively when it's nuanced and feeling as opposed to dialogue. Tell us about your journey.
Yeah, look, honestly, my journey into this role was different to the way that I've approached other roles. I think normally I'm quite a thinky actor, and I would take more of a really methodical, beats and actions and, do my homework sort of approach. Whereas with this film, because of the subject matter, and I suppose because of the way that James and I had been collaborating with it, I took more of a nuanced is the wrong word, but I guess I lent into art and looked for inspiration in other places as my way in. So very early on, James and I were sharing images that we found evocative or resonant, and we developed like a shared library basically of paintings, of poetry, of music. And I think approaching it from a sort of feeling way, this is gonna sound like crazy talk to a lot of actors probably, but approaching it this way instead of from like more thinky way probably allowed me to be more physically connected and in the moment, and maybe, I mean, what I was aiming for was being less performative in a way and just letting it sort of move through me. So that's how I approached the
I mean,
part.
it's a bit funny that you should say, "Oh, they'll think I'm crazy," because in actual fact, the poor character has not only has she got this background of deep grief, but of course, people will assume elements of her perception based on the grief. But in actual fact, there's this eeriness going on that's outside herself. I mean, that's a quite a compelling sort of cross. intersection between the actor and the actual story that you're telling.
Yeah, definitely. And it was really, you know, juicy to be playing in the cross section of all that, and in the murkiness of all of that. Yeah, it was a very meaty role to take on, and really, really rewarding.
So tell me about the music, because of course the music is really important, James.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought it up, Annie. It's by a friend of mine, Mitchell Sloan, who's a great composer based in Sydney. And we've worked together quite a few times in the past. You know, the most recent one was A Nest, which was a short film, which was also at the Melbourne International Film Festival. And yeah, we worked on the music. Really, it was very organic, similar to bringing Lucy on early. I brought Mitchell on as one of my early collaborators. And so we had a lot of different ideas, and the music sort of took on different forms over the course of the making of the film. But you know, really the finished score, which you hear in the film, was really concocted over a very short you know, period of, you know, a few days when I went to Sydney, and we'd let all of those ideas that were sort of bubbling in the background, and you know, which we were using in the edit as we were incrementally kind of making the film, we kind of, you know, left that all there on the table, and then we started reinventing the score you know, together, me and Mitchell, sort of side by side in his studio, and we had an incredible collaboration, and I'm really proud of the finished score. I think it's quite emotive and also quite haunting, which is what we were going for.
So obviously the editing is quite tied to this pacing. I mean, like Lucy was saying about beats and pacing, for an actor, it's obviously the overall film. You're constantly thinking about that, especially as it's a creepy film.
Exactly. Yeah, pacing was huge, and I think tone, you know, the tone and the pace of the film was always sort of top of my mind. A lot of that was informed as well by the performances, amazing performances in the film, you know, particularly Lucy, because she's such a you know, she is the central character of this film, and so much of the film you know, is based around her character. But there were some terrific scenes with Lucy and her scene partners as well, which really, there is a musicality to the performance. There's a musicality to the pausing, to the pacing, to the breath that we're really conscious of when we were editing and trying to, you know, have the music and have the editing really best serve some of those really powerful scenes, which were giving me chills even on the day as we were filming them. So I thought we have something special here before we kind of manufactured anything, you know.
So you have a particular interest in, well, it's supernatural horror, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I would say it exists right in the intersection between supernatural horror and, you know, maybe a psychological chiller.
Yeah, and so you've got a particular interest in that genre?
I do. I love that genre. I mean, you know, there's a long history of films in that genre which really inspire me. I mean, I mentioned a few with Rosemary's Baby and Don't Look Now. Also, The Innocents was another one, which was an incredible inspiration to me from the 60s. And, you know, I think there's something in that genre where there's no easy answers. They don't tell you, is this fully a character's psychological manifestation due to their unraveling? And they don't tell you, no, this is just outright, you know, a spooky monster or a supernatural entity. They kind of give you, the audience, the chance to really let the film sort of, you know, seep into your subconscious and ask yourself those interesting questions, which I always find much more kind of interesting as a viewer, and much more of a, a great experience, like coming out of a film when I have those questions and I'm sort of stewing on those ideas for longer. I find that a lot more haunting and resonant.
I mean, it's interesting that in the writing it's tied to a European early colonial story. So it's tying itself to Europe as well as to the Australian milieu, which is kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm really glad you picked up on that. I mean, you know, often people sort of ask me where my influences come from. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, there's so many brilliant Australian films which inspired me and shaped me as a filmmaker. But, you know, particularly European films, I think, as well, really touch me and my sensibilities, I think, as well. And so certainly me and the cinematographer of our film, Alex Serafini, you know, were very interested in sort of that you know, a little bit of more of that European approach in terms of the camera work and in terms of the sort of the color grade of the film. And we didn't want it to necessarily feel like the type of Australian film that people have seen a lot of times before. I mean, there were a lot of bold decisions that we made, such as, you know, a 4:3 aspect ratio, which really we felt, you know, led fed into that idea rather of sort of the walls closing in on Alice as a character throughout the story. And, you know, it is a portrait of grief. And as Lucy mentioned, we were looking at a lot of art, which was also sort of portraits, you know, so that really sort of fed into the sensibility of the film.
Well, of course, it's the a lot of it is internal to that particular space. And when you talk about the colour grade, that was fascinating underneath the last sequences where, because the camera, I mean, Lucy, the camera loves you. So when you're under the house, that beautiful look, that tonality was quite extraordinary, really.
Yeah, that was a really challenging sequence to film. but I agree. I think it looks absolutely stunning, and a large part of that is obviously due to, you know, the amazing production design work on the film, the incredible sets that, you know, you'd look at this film and you wouldn't believe the budget it was made with. You know, I think that the team just did such a phenomenal job, and of course, you know, can't go past mentioning the incredible cinematography by Alex Serafini as well. I mean, everything just comes together and, yeah, creates a really sort of painterly effect, which is something that we discussed a lot when we were making the films, especially when we were referencing so much art in the creation of it as well.
Yeah, yeah. And how long was the shoot then?
The shoot sort of took place over a large period of time. You know, we were shooting on weekends, which was something that I had heard, you know, Christopher Nolan say he did on his first feature film, which was to shoot it around everybody's full-time work commitments, you know, so everybody would get together on the weekends. And overall, I think the amount of shoot days, we went over 40 days, didn't we, Luce? But our initial plan was for it to be around 20. But again, it was all part of that organic production where everybody just wanted to be the very best film it could be. And we started out with a crew of around 20 on set, which was, you know, very much sort of outside my comfort zones with my quite humble roots. And then we ended up with literally, it would just be like me and Alex, our cinematographer, and Lucy, you know, under the house together getting a pickup shot. So it was such an evolution, but I think it definitely needed the time that it took to make, but it just fed into that whole sort of organic collaboration that we had. Yeah.
And so there's the debut at the Melbourne International Film Festival, which is very exciting, isn't it?
Hugely exciting. I mean, I love MIFF. Lucy loves MIFF. It's a festival that we love to attend just as fans. So to be having our world premiere here in Melbourne, where our team is, where we made this film, is the ultimate. I mean, it's a dream come true. So yeah, love MIFF, and very excited to be able to share it with our home crowd.
Yeah. Okay. And so all the people that have worked on this film, what was the reaction after it became the total finished product, as it were?
Well, it was awesome because we were able to have a cast and crew screening, and we did that with an earlier, you know, cut of the film. I mean, it was pretty close to finished at that point, but we didn't have our sound design and we didn't have our color grade and everything. I really just wanted to bring everybody together because it had been such a long process to sort of experience the film. And it was wonderful. I mean, everybody, you know, I think, you know, it's the joy, I think, is just the surprise that everybody has, and the hope that you have is that people will be proud of the finished result that they've poured so much energy and time and resources into, you know, for very little, you know, financial incentive or reward. So I think that, you know, that's ultimately what it was about for us, was it was a massive labor of love, and we couldn't have done it without our cast and crew being so generous. And so it was awesome to be able to sort of celebrate that, you know, have a big kind of, you know, party around the finishing of the film, and now with MIFF on the horizon, we'll do it again, you know, with an actual audience for the first time of the general public.
Oh, how exciting. The other thing about it is that you obviously you didn't get money to produce this, you fell onto your own devices.
Exactly right. Yeah, this was completely independently financed. Amazing support from my friends and family who had seen the success of my short film Ness beforehand, and we sort of used that as a proof of concept that I was ready to make my first feature. We did a couple of test scenes as well, me and the cinematographer, and we, Lucy and I got together and we started finding the character on camera, which was a really beautiful process to start to discover. And that was enough for our generous friends and family to be like, yep, you guys are ready, and we believe in this story, and we believe in you more than anything. And so very, very grateful for their support. But it was, as Lucy mentioned, it was a very tiny micro budget. And we found those constraints to actually breed a really interesting creativity in the end. So I think a film like this, I'm not sure how it could be made any other way, really. It was a very intimate, very kind of DIY production.
And Lucy, for it's a great role for you, being in at the ground floor on such a intimate production. This is part of actually controlling your own art, isn't it, really, for an actor?
Oh, definitely. And it's this kind of project that is the reason I'm in it. They're just when you are working with people who are so collaborative and generous and, allow you to be part of it from such an early stage, it's just such a joy. It's just such a joyful experience. And you get to really, put more of yourself into the character and really make it something that's going to be meaty and satisfying. And you're just so much more connected and pour so much more of your own inspiration into it. It's fantastic.
So tell my listeners when it's on at MIF.
It'll be the 8th and 9th of August. And so on the 8th, I believe it's a 9:30 session, and the 9th, it's a 6 p.m. session at Kino Cinemas on Collins Street.
Oh, perfect. Okay, thank you very much for spending some time with me.
Lovely to chat with you, Annie. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Dump da 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 dump da 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 bum 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 bum. Hi, I'm Rod Quantock, and you're listening to Fill in the Dots. You know who you're listening to. Why do I have to tell you who you're listening to? You know who you're listening to. You're listening to, yes, Fill in the 3CR Community Radio. You got it right. You've won a giraffe. We're at 8:55 a.m. We're on digital radio and streaming at 3cr.org.au. 3CR has been making trouble since 1976, and occasionally I've been part of the trouble that's been made. It's a vital part of our media landscape, and I'd encourage you to get a hacksaw, an oxyacetylene torch, and go up to the Dandenongs and bring down all those broadcast towers that aren't 3CR's towers. And let's make 3CR the only source of information to an information-starved, dumbed-down Australian community. Written, authorised, and spoken by Neil Mitchell.
And that's the end of the program. You're on 3CR, your community radio station, and we were having a chat with the leading lights of the Latcher, James Hunter, the writer-director, and Lucy Lovegrove, the lead actor. The reason for why I wanted to do the ID with the wonderful, redoubtable Rod Quantock is that there is a movie that has been made honouring Rod Quantock, and it's called Rod Quantock Comedy Warrior. Now, you may have caught it at the Castlemaine Documentary Film Festival, but now it's got a theatrical release at the Nova, which is starting today, the 30th of July. It's part of the Nova's new sequence of screenings, and Fiona Cochrane's film is one of the films that she's been making, documenting the extraordinary cultural resurgence, which was based in Melbourne during the 70s and 80s. And Rod, of course, as Tom Ballard says on the poster, I regard Rod Quantock, as many others do, as the grandfather of comedy in this latest iteration of comedy success, like the comedy festival and all the rest of it. He's been there. And this film is a great film because it has a huge amount of documentary film and voices that take people through the his career, but also the social and artistic milieu of that time. Many people won't realise how much they owe to the great man and the other people that he worked with, creating a whole comic scene. And of course, Rod Quantock doesn't see himself as a great man. He sees himself as being part of a community, and the film itself shows you that that's the case. So if you've got any interest in the history of comedy in Australia, in Melbourne in particular, really you should go and have a look and enjoy this film, Rod Quantock, Comedy Warrior. We've come to the end of the program. Coming up next is Published or Not. Don't forget to look at the MIF program to see if there's anything. I mean, there's so many things that you could possibly want to see. Just buying one ticket to go and see something marvellous would be worth your while. It's in a cinema near you. We'll go out with a bit of Thelma Plum. When it rains, it pours.
Doesn't matter how you pack it up, it's better to leave while you're in love. Even though we're not together, I can't seem to change the weather. Whether I'm with you or you're
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.